welcome to this special edition of Why Do We Do That? The program that asks the question, Why do we do that?
Yes, strong that. We would have thought it. My name is Angus Catfondly.
And I am Judy Bruhahaha. And tonight we ask,
Christmas, why do we do that? On December 24th, families all over Britain will be... On December 24th, families all over Britain will be sitting down for Christmas Eve.
They will be singing the Christmas carol, reading the Christmas card, decorating the Christmas trees,
wrapping the Christmas gift and playing them into Christmas stockings, which will be hung over Christmas fireplaces containing Christmas love lit by Christmas flame from Christmas matches and...
Okay. I think we get the message, but we need to know why we do all this. Take a mistletoe, for example.
No, thank you. What are you suggesting?
I'm suggesting that we go over to our Spain in all things green to find out about this little plant and all the other vegetation that we all special at Christmas.
Oh, I see. Yes, let's go over to our expert. In the field, Marjorie Pottinger. Marjorie, tell us where you are right now.
Hello, Angus. I'm in the middle of a field. And here with me is world-renowned mistletoe farmer Albert Single Winter. Albert, you are somewhat of an expert in a history of mistletoe.
That's correct, Miss Potting said. Did you know that mistletoe was used by Druid priests 200 years before the birth of Christ? In their winter celebration, they revered the plant because it appeared to have no roots yet remained green throughout the winter.
Yes, and the ancient said, not so ancient one when necessary, believe that Mr. Two had magical healing power. They thought that it could act as an antidote to poison, an aid to infertility, and ward off every spirit. All this for less than the price of a pack of multivitamins.
Romans believed that enemies who met under hanging mistletoe would lie down their arms and embrace.
But were not enemies?
No, but we could be friends. We do have to test the product. You know, March, quality control.
This is Marjorie Pottinger, handing you back to the studio and making a hasty exit from the field of duty. Thanks, Marjorie. A fast detaining report.
Is it time for the weather forecast yet?
No, I don't think a weather forecast is scheduled for today.
Oh, but we will have snow, won't we?
Snow? Did you know that the snow of Christmas is a completely fictitious concept invented by the Markov of CSL Radio Advertisement? We get the snow in May. Everyone knows that.
Well, this is a Christmas play. There's always snow at the end, isn't there?
Look, let's just move on next item. Trudy Wayne Pepper present a special report on...
Christmas cards! Why do we do that?
An early sort of Christmas card was first used in England when young boys were made to practice their writing skill by creating Christmas greeting for their parents. But the first real Christmas card was invented by a famous Englishman, who was just too busy to write individual messages for all his friends.
My name is Henry Cole, and I was the first director of very important and Victorian Albert Museum. And yes, my job meant that I was just to visit, to sit down and write individual greetings.
So Sir Henry commissioned me, John Calcutt Horsley, a somewhat talented artist, to illustrate a three-panel card that he could send to all of his friends.
I don't think that we can use the one of the men with a Christmas pudding stack over his head.
Too informal, you think?
No, just plain silly. We Victorians are not able to understand humor for at least another 50 years.
They eventually choose a traditional picture of a family enjoying the Christmas festivities in a sensible way, the typical of design that was still the popular today, although perhaps not as popular. He has a picture of a man with a Christmas pudding stuck over his head. Back to in the studio.
Thank you, Trudy.
Angus.
Now to our next item.
Angus, what will Christmas be without a Christmas tree?
Yes, we take a look at the origins of the humble Christmas tree with another of our green finder expert, Froela Shimbrecci.
What on earth were you doing? This is so unprofessional.
I was just looking out for the snow. There will be snow, won't there?
Oh, shut up.
Hi, like me. Aren't you? Hi, like me, I'm sure that many of you have often wondered why each December we decide to uproot a huge tree from the garden and place it in our living rooms. Well, to understand this strange custom, we have to travel back in history to 16th century Germany.
Hello, we are 16th century German.
Yes, knowing German in the 16th century.
You say.
Yes, quite, knowing German in the 16th century.
You say that.
Get to point.
I'm trying to, in 16th century German.
Oh, let me, in 16th century Germany.
No, you are doing be the 16th century before you finish. Let me, 16.
Trees. In this place, at this time, fir trees were decorated both indoors and outdoors.
With apple, roses, gilded candies, and colored paper.
A fir tree hung with apple symbols the garden of Eden and was known as a pear tree.
It was me, Martin Luther, another 16th century German and Protestant reformer, who first decorated an indoor Christmas tree with lighted candles, recreated the beauty of the star that I saw shining through the branches of a fir tree.
Like mistletoe, the evergreen fir tree was believed by ancient people to help carry away evil spirits, witches, ghosts, and illusions. They would hang out of such trees, along with holly, outside doors and windows. But how did the Christmas tree tradition find its way to this source?
I think that you will find that I was responsible for that.
You're not a 16th century German.
Certainly not. Although some of my ancestors were, I am Prince Albert. When I married King Victoria, I thought that it would be a really nice idea for us to have a Christmas tree like the ones we had in Germany. When people saw an etching of our family got heard around the Christmas tree, at Windsor Castle in 1848. They all wanted one. Well, all the rich people anyway.
Wasn't it another famous story, Charles Dickens with Betek Christmas?
Why don't you ask him? He's over here, behind the 16th century Germans.
Well, I have to say that I not really invent Christmas, but one of them of my little stories, Caleb, a Christmas Carol, did celebrate well and helped to make Christmas holidays and festivities popular again.
Is it true that for the first 8 years of your life it snowed at Christmas?
Yes, it snowed you're dying it. That's why I shared the story with a brinty backdrop. Did you know that to begin with, nobody wanted to publish a Christmas Carol, so I have to pay for it to be published myself.
I love your books, by the way. Would you mind unfolding this one for me?
Of course not. What would you like me to put?
Oh, just put To Flowey, Loved from Charlie. Back to you in the studio.
You see, snow. We can't have snow without Christmas without snow. Please, can we have some snow?
Look, get us light will you?
Oh, there's no need to get frosty.
If you listen, our next first has a connection to snow. See if you can guess. It is somebody very special who appears once a year at Christmas time.
My Uncle Hank. See, he only appears at Christmas time for a free glass of sherry and a buffet lunch.
He is a jolly fat man all dressed in red.
When Rooney?
No, Santa Claus.
Oh, him. Yes, let's find out about Santa by going over to our Lapland correspondent, Nancy Flaminger, and ask,
Santa Claus, why do we do that?
Thank you, Angus. I'm going to chat to two people who can tell us the story of Father Christmas. This is Professor Egghead McBuffin and his research assistant Kimberly Oveglobin. Professor, where did the story start?
Well, the story began in the 4th century with a man known as Saint Nicholas, who was bishop of a place called Myra. He was a generous sort of child who was devoted to children.
His kindness and generosity led people to believe that he could perform miracles, and after his death, he became the patron of Saint of Russia.
I become known for my red cape, long flowing beard, and bishop meter. This is a point it had to do with you and me.
The reputation of good old Saint Nick spread across Europe, where different countries had different interpretations of his story.
The story survived the longest in Holland, when the spelling of his name, Saint Nicholas, was finally transformed into Santa Claus, and he became known for rewarding good children by leaving trees in their shoes.
It was solely occupation, but somebody had to do it.
As I understand it, when that settler went to America, the tradition went with them and his name became the more modern, Santa Claus.
Yep, and when we Americans go or Claus or Santa, we turn him into the good old boy that he is today.
That's right, buddy. And with Coca-Cola,
and when we Americans go or Santa on Claus or Santa, we turned him into the good old boy that he is today.
That's right, buddy. And when Coca-Cola first used Santa on their advertisements, poster in the 1930s, they digged a large round granddad out in his modern red coat and trousers, black boot and red and white hat.
And a great big America. Ho, ho, ho. Belly low.
Ho, ho, ho. Good blaze Santa and good blaze America.
But alone, that's not the only contribution that you Americans have made to the modern Christmas. Of course, there is White Christmas, an endless repeat of the Wizard of Oz on Christmas Day. But there is another character who is very important to Christmas.
Gee, aren't we great? Who is he?
Here's a clue.
I'm Goddard Homer Simpson.
Dad, no, I'm talking about Rudolph, the red-nosed reindeer.
Oh, yay him. Is he American? He's so like a 16th century German.
Incidentally, my name is Robert L. May, and in 1939, the department store company I worked for asked me to write a story for them to sell at Christmas. I came up with the idea for Rudolph and tested the story out on my 4-year-old daughter. It was very successful, and by 1946, despite the wartime shortage of paper, 6 million copies had been distributed.
An interesting fact about Robert's story was that it was based on the story on the ugly duckling, and he nearly called the red-nosed hero Rollo or Regna before he settled on Rudolph. Ready, everybody. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Regna the red snow reindeer has a very shiny nose.
Nah. Well, that's what a nice way to end the program. What a lovely Christmas story Rudolph makes.
Yes, a nice traditional Christmas story with plenty of snow.
Oh, do be quiet about the snow. I wish everybody a Merry Christmas.
You're right. A Merry Christmas to everyone, and it's good night from both of us.
Merry!